Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
From 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine, glad you're with us for OutKick 360 Friday edition, final hour, as we get you ready for the college football and NFL weekend. The crew is all here. Chad, Paul, I have been looking forward to this segment all week with Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. We kick off hour number three, previewing the top game of the college football weekend. Chad, the reason why is because every year we can talk ourselves into why Tennessee will compete against Florida. And every year, Florida finds a way to win.
So Brent, all different now.
Hope you're doing well. I know the atmosphere there is awesome. Wish we were there tomorrow to take everything in. Why is this year different for Tennessee tomorrow if they get a victory over Florida?
Well, I think it's very similar to 2016. The difference in the game will be quarterback play. You know, when Tennessee won the game in Knoxville in 2016, the last time they beat Florida, Josh Dobbs was better than Appleby was, the Florida quarterback. And that was the difference in the game. Dobbs got off to a bad start, but got hot. And he was dominant, and Tennessee dominated that second half. I think if Tennessee wins this game, you're going to look back, and I think Hendon Hooker is going to have a huge part of that. I think it's not just going to be his arm. I think it's going to be his legs. This is Hendon Hooker's moment, and I think he's ready for it, and I think he will play well tomorrow, and I think quarterback play will be the difference in this matchup when you look at it. That's not to say Anthony Richardson's not talented. He is. But he builds so much off of his legs, and he's been reluctant to run the last 2 weeks. We'll see if they turn him loose tomorrow. But I just like Tennessee at the quarterback position better than Florida.
To add on one thing that Hutton said, I will say, as a Tennessee grad, I really haven't thought Tennessee might win since 2016, and that's the last time it happened, because I don't have good feelings about this series, and for good reasons if you're a fan. But Brent, it's different between the way the fans feel and their energy about this rivalry and the way they enter this game. It doesn't really matter other than the noise they create. What about this Tennessee program under Josh Heupel? How do you feel like they're treating this series, this game, going into a big matchup with Florida, a team that, you know, Vegas has them as a 10.5-point favorite against?
Yeah, it's a great point and a great question. I'll say this. I'm in the believe it, you know, see it to believe it camp is where I've been in, because I've sat in a booth for this game since 1999. Okay. I haven't called wins, not many of them. Right. And I've called losses and been a part of calling losses every way possible, from the Gaffney catch, no catch, to Hail Marys, to 4th-and-13 conversions, you name it. You know, it's seemingly Florida's found a way to win it, and Tennessee's found a way to lose it. So I think that's where your fan base is coming from, and I understand that point. From a Josh Heupel standpoint, he's been very, and I'm not surprised, he's been very business as usual. Maybe it's a quarterback thing a little bit. We talked to Casey Clawson on our Rewind show on Sunday night on YouTube, and I asked him, I said, how did you convey to your team, it's just ball, just go play? And he goes, that's all it is. You just go play ball. And I think that is the thing that that Josh Heupel brings about. Josh Heupel was more worked up last week because nobody was asking him about Akron, and he was worried about that than he has been this week. Because this week, as he said yesterday when he met the media, guys, what are you going to do, hide and avoid it? It's all anybody's talking about. Embrace it. This is the moment. Now you got to go prepare. But he hasn't changed up his preparation. They've gone about this week the same way they've gone about every week since he's been here. And I think that exudes something to players, because we've seen in this series a Tennessee team scrimmage on an open date Saturday the week before. We've seen Tennessee go to Gainesville on a Thursday and stay an extra day to get acclimated to the heat. All those different things to break up your routine we've seen in the past. Josh Heupel said, you know what? Another ball game. Let's go play.
Brent Hubbs with us, VolQuest.com, as we preview Tennessee and Florida. You mentioned Richardson, one-dimensional. He wants to get on the move, be on the run. Tennessee's not Kentucky defensively, but can Tennessee do some things that Kentucky did well? They forced him into turnovers, bad turnovers, and they corralled him enough to where he was not able to stay within rhythm or be in his game like he was against Utah. Can Tennessee, albeit slower and not nearly as consistent as the Wildcats defense, Can they find ways to do that instead of letting Richardson do what he does best tomorrow?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, Tennessee believes that they can. They think they're better in the front seven, and obviously that's been a focal point for this defense since the entire offseason, not just for Anthony Richardson, but you go back to the last time they played a true running quarterback, and what did Matt Corral do to Tennessee, right? It was quarterback power for 27 carries and 200 yards or whatever the number ended up being. So, it is a focal point. It's been a focal point. Tennessee played DJ Irons last week from Akron, and I think they were hoping that he would run a little bit more than what he did. Now, he was reluctant to run because he was banged up, but Tennessee prepped all week long for a running quarterback. So they've prepped for 2 weeks for a running quarterback. They've yet to see one. Tennessee's rush lanes have been solid to this point, but they haven't been tested like this. You got to tackle in open space. You can't blow backside contain. All those things if Richardson's going to run. I mean, your ends have to play upfield, and they have to play the contain, and they have to stay in their lanes. If you get – look, you get washed down inside and give up a soft corner, you got problems. That's what Utah did, and that's why Richardson ran for 100 yards. Tennessee's got to be smart. They've got to play – you know, not lose their focus the entire game and play in their rush lanes, and we'll find out if they can do that. They feel like they're better equipped to do it this year than last.
Talk us through the Cedric Tillman factor here and the impact you think that'll have.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to have an impact. And anybody who says that it's not, I don't understand where they would come at that from. I'm surprised the line hasn't moved with all of the scuttle about Tillman not being available the last few days. Now, nobody's officially ruled him out, but nobody's talking like he's going to play either. Cedric Tillman's been targeted 33% of the time when Hendon Hooker has thrown the football this year, right? I mean, that's his security blanket. That's where he's going with the football. So who steps up in his place to offset that? Who does Hendon Hooker have trust in? He probably doesn't have the same trust in anybody in his receiving core that he has for Cedric Tillman. So who can win that trust early in this game? Who can get open and make plays? Obviously, Brew McCoy is going to get more opportunities. Jalen Hyatt's going to get more opportunities. And then where do they go from there? Is it Squirrel White? Is it Walker Merrill? Is it Ramel Keaton? My guess is it's a combination of all three. And we'll see. Brew McCoy has lined up opposite of Cedric Tillman. And Tillman has been with the slot receiver 90% plus during the season this year. So do they move McCoy over to where they're bracketed? Those two guys are on the same side of the field. And then you play a Keaton, Merrill, Squirrel White, you know, on the backside or the opposite side in that one-on-one situation. Or do you bump out Jalen Hyatt outside and play Squirrel White some inside? I think you can get creative, but there's no doubt those guys need to catch the ball early for Hendon Hooker to make sure the trust factor is there, because the guy he believes in the most is Cedric Tillman, and it certainly doesn't feel like there's much optimism he's going to be on the field Saturday.
Brent, Tennessee needs to run the football. To do that, they need running backs. What's the situation right now with Jabari Small and Dylan Sampson? I know Jalen Wright had a career day in carries against Akron, but where does Tennessee stand with the health of that running back room?
Well, I think Jalen Wright will start the game for Tennessee. I expect Jabari Small to go and be available. I don't know how long the shoulder is going to hold up, if it'll hold up fine or if it won't. He'll have it braced up, and we'll see. That's one of those tricky things, right? It can feel good, and you just get hit on it the wrong way, and all of a sudden – you know, you're hurting and you can't go. So we'll just see. I think Dylan Sampson is a situation where he's going to try to go in warm-ups. He says he's played with a sprained ankle before. This is not high school where you're the fastest guy on the field by far. So we'll see what he can do during warm-ups if he's available in some kind of emergency role. Tennessee at one point this week on the practice field was repping Princeton Fan at running back as an emergency guy because they just weren't sure where they were going to be and where their depth is. Where's their confidence level with Justin Williams-Thomas, the other freshman who's played sparingly to this point? That's why I go back to Hendon Hooker in this game, and it's not just his arm, it's his legs. He has to be a factor in the run game, similar to what Dobbs was in 2016 when he rushed for nearly 100 yards and threw for 300 yards, similar to what Tennessee did with Hendon Hooker in the Pittsburgh game. I think they're going to have to design run him you know, 8, 10, 12 times in this game. I think he's got to be that big of a part of the run game for Tennessee. We will see. Tennessee's run it well against two teams that don't stop the run very well. Against Pittsburgh, who stops the run well, Tennessee didn't run it well. And quite frankly, with the running backs, weren't very committed to trying to run it. They felt like their best option was Hendon Hooker. We'll see how well they can run the game, you know, run the ball in this game on Saturday, because Florida's going to, I'm sure, load up and sell out to stop the run and be comfortable playing man coverage on the outside. It's what they do.
Brent, we know Ventrell Miller is important to Florida. How important is he to this game? Because he's questionable rushing off the edge against what Tennessee will want to do in the passing game.
I think he's huge, and it's not from a physical play standpoint. I think he's huge from a mental standpoint, getting guys lined up. A week ago when they did not have him, it's two freshmen at the linebacker position. I mean, Miller's their quarterback on defense. And I think part of the issue that Florida had in stopping the Baylor transfer at quarterback for South Florida last week, who ran for over 100 yards, was they had a hard time getting lined up. They busted a lot of stuff, and I think part of that was because they didn't have their quarterback on the field. Now, he's practiced some late this week. Supposedly, he went through practice yesterday in a non-contact jersey. I don't know how much Florida hits on the practice field on Wednesdays and Thursdays of game week. Most teams don't hit on a Thursday. So there's talk like today he was in a regular jersey, not a non-contact jersey. I don't know what that means on your accelerated walkthrough or not. Most people thought he was going to miss 3 to 5 weeks with that injury. If he comes back against Tennessee, that means he's missed basically 12, 13 days. That would be an early return. I don't know that he would be 100%, but Florida may feel like they're going to let him chance it and go out there and see what he can do just to help that defense get lined up. They had a hard time lining up last week. I think he's big mentally for Florida.
Defensively for Tennessee, Juwan Mitchell got his first action last week against Akron. There's some freshmen now getting some more playing time. Brent, who do you see sort of elevating in playing time on the defensive side of the ball for Tennessee that could make an impact in this game against Florida?
I take one guy to keep an eye on, and it could be feast or famine a little bit with him. I don't know. Is Joshua Joseph off the edge? Okay. And when I say feast or famine, does he have enough focus and mentality to play contain the way you need to against Anthony Richardson? He's long. He gets upfield. He played a bunch of snaps last week. Roman Harrison only played a handful of snaps last week. Been a little bit banged up. We'll see where Harrison is. I think you can see Joshua Joseph early in this game, how he plays that leverage game on the outside as an end in the contain process will be really important to see how many snaps he can play and what they do with him and how much they rotate up there. I mean, they're going to start with Barron and they're going to start with Byron Young, but they like to slide Barron inside on pass rush, third down situations. But you're still going to have to play contain on third down because of Richardson's scrambling ability. So can Joshua Joseph handle that up front? Don't be surprised if they play Tyreek West a little bit as well to try to spell some snaps. They do not want to play Omari Thomas 60, 65 snaps in this game like he did against Pittsburgh. They would like to get that number down. So Rodney Garner may rotate some guys early to see who's locked in and who he can get lathered up front. I think you'll see more fresh faces up front than you will anywhere else on the field for Tennessee. I think at linebacker, it's going to be those three, Mitchell, Banks, Beasley. And in the secondary, I think you're going to see Christian Charles out at the corner. Florida will try to challenge him and pick on him a little bit. But I think the rest of it's going to be pretty much who you've seen all season long for Tennessee.
Brent Hubbs with us. Brent, forgive me. I'm always kind of looking ahead with the storylines here.
Okay.
In the offseason, we were discussing if Tennessee beats Pittsburgh or Florida, what it could set up. If they beat both, what does it mean?
It probably means Danny White's writing another paycheck to Josh Heupel pretty soon, right? I mean, he's going to be elevated in his status pretty quick, you know, because he's beat somebody. But I mean, it will set up a month of October where Tennessee's going to be on the focal, you know, going to be in the forefront. They're going to climb in the rankings, and people are going to be talking about them, and it's going to make Tennessee relevant. Now, you know, you got an open date. You got to get some people well. Then you got to go to Baton Rouge, which I think is going to be harder than any Tennessee fan has thought. You know, they look at Brian Kelly first year and they watch him play against Florida State and this, and they're acting like, you know, that they're not very good. They will be good. They will be ready to play. They're getting better. They're starting to find themselves a little bit.
It's the easiest. It's the easiest it will be, but it will still be very difficult with Brian Kelly there. Right.
Just ask Mississippi State.
Right. I mean, I think so. I mean, Mississippi State, had the lead till the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden here comes LSU, bam, 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 and it's over. But yes, to your point, it will be the easiest, but it won't be easy. But it sets up a October of relevance for Tennessee, I think, is the biggest thing. And when you look at Tennessee, you really do have to go back to 2016 to find Tennessee in a moment of October relevance. Now, we saw what Tennessee did. That year they beat Florida, then they go beat Georgia on the Hail Mary, and then they lose in overtime to A&M because they didn't go for two at the end. Well, you can debate whether they should have went for two at the end of regulation there. But then it was all set up for them, and they collapsed down the stretch. But my point is, that month of October, Tennessee was relevant in college football. They haven't been relevant in college football in October very often the last decade and a half. And that's what a win tomorrow would do for Tennessee, is it would make them relevant in October.
If they win this game afterwards, does Heupel acknowledge it as significant in the recent context of the series and what Tennessee-Florida means? Or does he stick with kind of the, I don't want to say just another game, but the the kind of tone he's had this week coming into it?
Well, I think he will acknowledge the significance for the Tennessee fan base, because he's embraced this fan base. They really like him. He's continues to say glowing things about them. So, Paul, I think he will talk about the relevance of it for the Tennessee fan base because of the scars and what they've been through. With his team, I think it will be more of a, okay, what are you going to do with it, right? I mean, if they were to win the game, you won the game. Now, what are you going to go do with it? Is that your high watermark? Are you going to build off of that? I think it will be a very much right back to work mentality after you celebrate for 24 hours for Josh Heupel. I think that will be his approach internally. I think externally, he will certainly acknowledge and appreciate the fact that it's a significant win for a Tennessee fan base who, again, has got a lot of scars for the way this game's gone the last 20 years plus.
Brent, I've been solely focused, admittedly, on Richardson and the matchup there with how they corral him, keep him on the cage rush where he can't get outside and make things happen. Outside of him, what's the matchup to watch tomorrow?
Well, I think it's Tennessee's ability to stop the run with the running backs. They've got three running backs who are solid players. They kind of mix and match with all three of those guys. I think that, and specifically within that, I think it's early downs. Right. I mean, can you? It's easier to defend Anthony Richardson if they're in third and eight, third and nine. So can Tennessee win the early down, win the first down battle, and put themselves in a situation where it's easier to contain Richardson, because it's hard to scramble for 10 or 12 yards for a first down. He literally has to throw it. So I think within the game, it's Tennessee's ability to stop Florida's ground game on early downs to force them into third and long. I think that's a big key for Tennessee's defense.
Well, and he's not good throwing on third down. We hit those numbers earlier. The fact you didn't mention a wide receiver matchup, though, is a bit surprising in this. We know the run game means a lot in determining the winner of this rivalry. But if a wide receiver gets going against this secondary, does that speak volumes to what's ahead for Tennessee and how they're not quick, they're slow in the secondary and the back end?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously if a receiver makes a bunch of plays for Florida, that means Anthony Richardson's had a great day playing the position. Right now, I don't think anybody's talking about a receiver, because you just mentioned all the poor numbers of right. Richardson throwing the ball, how bad he's been. So if a receiver has a big day, I think the bigger thing is they could not get Anthony Richardson out of rhythm. They did not win enough up front to get them out of rhythm. Is this secondary going to be a lockdown secondary? No, they're not. And they won't be all year long. That's why they've got to get to the quarterback and they've got to affect the quarterback. That's why you have seen Tim Banks be super aggressive up front. They've done it some with just a four-man speed rush. They've done it some with blitzes. They brought nickels. They brought safeties. They've tried to mix in and match because they want to affect the quarterback, because I don't think they feel comfortable rushing three, dropping eight and say, hey, our secondary can cover everywhere, because I don't think this secondary has proven that they can do that. Florida's receivers are not bad, but they don't have a guy with 100 yards receiving. They don't have a go-to guy at receiver. I don't want to say they don't have a guy who doesn't scare you, but with Richardson's inconsistency, they don't have a guy that you just go, oh, wow. You know, they don't have one of those guys that we've seen through the years to give Tennessee a ton of trouble. But again, if Richardson gets hot, then you got a whole different ballgame on your hands.
No doubt. Brent, leave us with this. The atmosphere in Knoxville, the buildup for this game. Game day's there. Set the scene for us tomorrow. What are we going to see whenever we see the shots of Knoxville?
Mass humanity of people on campus. I mean, you know, Danny White's throwing a tailgate party for people who don't have tickets. I don't know where those people are going to park.
We're right here, by the way.
Humanity. So,
here we are.
I mean, I don't know where they're going to go park and everything, but you know, the pitchers. I mean, I was on campus yesterday, driving off campus yesterday. I mean, the Vol Navy looked full yesterday, right? And then there's pictures on Facebook of dozens of boats lining up to come through the lock at Fort Loudoun to get to the Tennessee River to get to the Vol Navy spot. So, I mean, it's a hard, hard sellout. I mean, you probably got to go back to 2016 Florida when you've seen this kind of ticket. I think there's more enthusiasm about this right now because of the style of play. There's not a moment where, you know, in 2016, Butch Jones should have won the two previous Florida games. So there was a lot more angst, all right? They lose that 10-9 game in 14, which was just a debacle of a loss.
Trayon Harris.
And then they lose. Yeah, then they lose on the fourth down play in, at the Swamp the next year. So 16 was all about nerves, okay? The feeling of this one's a little different. Tennessee fans, now you got a handful of people like me who are like, I remember this game, this game, this game, this game, this game,
and how it ended bad, right? Yeah, I'm the same way. Same way.
I mean, we remember all those games. But then you've got another collection of fans who are strutting through town pretty good, going, hey, we're double digit favorites. It's our time to lay the hammer to this team for the first time in a long, long time. So you got a little different confidence level with this matchup than you had in the 2016 matchup. I think the 2016 matchup was much more a lot more angst, and it was magnified by how bad Tennessee started that football game. If they can get off to a good start tomorrow, I mean, it's gonna come unhinged inside that stadium. It really is. I mean, this is as excited as we've seen Tennessee fans in a long time.
Chad, hit him with your hypo question with the fan base. The theme of the week, if he wins.
The theme for Heupel?
Yeah. So if Heupel wins, he endears himself to this fan base.
Oh, yeah. It's. I know he's not thinking about this, but Brent, you and I know what this does for Josh Heupel in the eyes of Tennessee fans to go and put one on Florida. Just win by a point even, but if they handle business, how much Tennessee fans will love him even more?
Oh, there's no doubt. This is the first game for Josh Heupel where he gets a mark beside his name.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And if you win, it's a good mark. If you don't win, it's a bad mark. It's an X. All the ones up until this point have been, okay, let's figure out what this guy's doing. I mean, Ole Miss was disappointing. Don't get me wrong. But you know, losing the bowl game was disappointing. But, it's okay. This is the one, there's expectation. You're the favorite. All the pressure's on Tennessee in this football game. Everything. Florida's coming in loose as a goose, right? I mean, they got nothing to lose at this point. They need to win it because they can't go 0-2 in conference play. But Billy Napier's in a honeymoon, right? Because if they don't win it, everybody's going to say, man, Dan Mullen left him empty, nothing. The culture's bad. They quit on him last year. He's got so much work to do to try to build this thing up. On the flip side, this is supposed to be your moment, right? This is a Josh Heupel. You're going to plant a bit of a flag moment. Not that you're supreme in the East, but you're planting a flag against a rival. If you win it, everybody's going to love you. If you lose it, everybody's going to go, wait a minute. And it's going to be a little bit different. There's going to be some reservation. They're not going to throw him out of town or none of that kind of stuff. But it will be the first mark, good or bad, on Josh Heupel in his career at Tennessee tomorrow.
Hey, and if Hendon Hooker comes out and plays fantastic, we already heard the buzz about Anthony Richardson off of week one against Utah. Get ready. Because the buzz will build all the way to the head-to-head matchup against Bryce Young in Alabama and Knoxville later in October. Brent?
You're exactly right, because the roadmap in front of Hendon Hooker is opportunity.
Yes.
If he plays well, there's so many opportunity games in front of him to showcase for all the national individual awards, including the Heisman Trophy.
Enjoy it. we're jealous. I would love to be in attendance tomorrow because this is one of those buzz. Every year that Florida comes to town, there's a buzz. But this feels different, and so does the Vegas line. It reflects that.
It's
different tomorrow. And Tennessee,
no question.
I'm shocked it's still 10 and a half.
They need to handle business against Florida for that reason.
I'm stunned nobody has put money on Florida to drop that line. I mean, when it started at 3.5 and jumped, I thought, okay, late in the week, it's going to bounce back down to 8, a touchdown, whatever. It has not budged, which surprises me. Nobody believes in Florida in Las Vegas. I mean, nobody's buying the Florida stuff at all right now.
I mean, Chad put...
But it should be fun.
Chad put $3.72 on it.
I put $5 on the Florida money line just to hedge my happiness a bit, Brent, which I'm sure a lot of Tennessee fans... I don't think that $5 will move that line down any, but it's worth the shot.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think it's gonna buzz it. It should be a blast. It should be a scene. We're going to all get on campus early tomorrow and mill around the mass of humanity, and then we'll see what happens. But I can't imagine there's going to be a louder place in college football. No offense to Kansas, who sold out this week against Duke. Good on you, Jayhawks. Congratulations. Lance Leopold's done a great job there, but there's not going to be a place in the country tomorrow like Neyland Stadium.
Hey, I look forward to when you guys take the air tomorrow outside of Gate 21. I'll be listening. Enjoy the broadcast. Enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy the coverage. And thank you for joining us today.
Thanks.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great one.
There's Brent Hubbs, VolQuest.com, the site of record for all things Tennessee, SEC coverage, and more. They've got it covered from Knoxville tomorrow for Tennessee and Florida. Should mention Trey Wallace will be there as well for Outkick, for our game of the week on Outkick.com for the SEC. Coming up, we go through the top games for tomorrow's college football slate outside of Tennessee and Florida. That's next on Outkick 360. The poll right now through Outkick on Twitter. Who are you taking in the Outkick 360 game of the week? Gators or Vols?
And that's a line. Who are you taking on the line?
Yeah, minus the line through DraftKings. Through DraftKings. It's plus 10.5 for Florida. Right now, 53.8% are taking the Vols minus 10.5. I'm one of them.
I took a Tennessee. I gave the points
here. I
Vegas
could see,
knows something here.
I could see Tennessee winning a close game. I would have a hard time taking minus 10
They're
and a half.
Their
Outkick is
people.
Geographically bigger in the among Tennessee fans and Florida fans, though, no?
One of our top states is California.
Florida's a huge state.
I would say Vegas is begging people to take Florida here. That's my read on this.
Seems like
I gave the points for that reason. Vegas knows, Chad.
Tennessee has been the better team so far this year. There's no disputing that. If they play the way they can play at home in front of this crowd, they're going to win pulling away.
But
I continue to – that Utah performance. Granted, it was at home and all that, but Utah – I'm trying to put into perspective of Utah was a team many were picking for the college football playoff.
You would agree Utah lost that game on the final drive, right? They're on the 4-yard line.
Still.
They're on the 4-yard – So you're saying Tennessee?
Richardson had some remarkable fourth down plays.
But Tennessee would have to lose this
play.
Game, is what Vegas is saying. Not Florida's not winning. Tennessee would have to lose it. I'm just not buying that the quarterback plays that often.
No, I Hendon Hooker, I have much more faith in than Anthony Richardson based on performance and what he's done for Tennessee. But if Anthony Richardson is going to be Anthony Richardson,
I'm trying to poke the bear, Paul.
Against Kentucky, Tennessee's got to take advantage. Right, Kentucky's defense was good enough to run it back for a touchdown when he made the big mistake, right? Tennessee's got to be that good on defense.
Top college football games of the weekend, Clemson and Wake Forest. This is a big matchup for Wake Forest. This is the hurdle game. So they win they win 10 or 11 games last year total, including the bowl game. This is the game that they let get away. And based on where Wake Forest is and all the preseason hype, they're on the road. They're the underdog. I think Clemson's starting the wrong quarterback. I would take Wake Forest money line on this. I think Wake Forest pulls the upset tomorrow. at Clemson. Clemson, by the way, if they don't have the longest home winning streak, I took a screenshot of this and I apologize. They have the second longest home winning streak in the country. I think Wake Forest wins this game on the road tomorrow. Well, this is at Wake Forest. Excuse me. I think Wake Forest wins at home.
You know that they play
NC State, by the way, a week later. You guys know what I think about the Wolfpack.
Can Wake withstand Clemson's defensive front is the question.
Well, Wake's got to be able to win a physical matchup with their run game. They've been able to run the football early. They need this against Clemson. It's tough to do. They have to win that one-on-one matchup on the offensive line.
That's where I don't have something. That's where my faith wanes a little bit.
Well, that's fair.
I mean, I'm rooting for Wake.
That's why they're favored by 7.
Well, there's something that fundamentally I can't get in line with when a college stadium has a corporate sponsor.
Okay.
And I'm really drawn away from Wake Forest playing in Truist Stadium.
I don't disagree with
you. Like Truist Park for the Braves.
Yeah,
you should support it because it's got the same sponsor as your team.
No, not in college. This is a reach. I want like some.
Truist through and through.
Paul, you're reading it wrong. This is not. You don't have the donors, so you have to go to the sponsors.
I want the Baptist preacher that founded that was one of the early ambassadors for Wake Forest on that stadium.
Wayne Smoot.
I want 4 different names. I want, Vaught Hemingway Stadium next to it with a hyphen. Don't give me Truist Stadium. I can't buy into the atmosphere at Truist Stadium at Wake Forest
And because of
Clemson's
that, the college football preacher, Dabo, is going on the road and winning.
Right. He is about to deliver a Sermon on the Mount postgame after they just stop Wake Forest. They're going to win. No one wants Clemson to win.
So
if you want the upset, we're rooting for Wake Forest. Clemson's defense is too tough. They're going to find a way to win a grind-it-out type game. And I think their offense will get going enough to win this one.
Chad, if...
at Truist Stadium.
Is Nebraska's future head coach hosting Baylor tomorrow?
Well, so reports that I know Outkick has a story also. There's multiple reports that you've got 2 possible future Nebraska coaches going head-to-head. Dave Aranda has been contacted by Nebraska, according to reports, and they are going all in on taking Dave Aranda from Baylor.
Why would he
go? For
the
next Nebraska coach. Because it's the Big Ten. And Baylor's
the Big
12.
Dude, a bad Big Ten job is not better than a Baylor job.
I think it's a very much a lateral move.
Not 5 years from now.
I wouldn't go. He can get a better job in the SEC or the Big Ten between now and then.
If he wanted to wait, he could get a better job eventually. But I can give you the reasons that Nebraska's a better job right now than even Baylor. But he's got Baylor rolling right now. I think Iowa State wins at home, though. Baylor
is Nebraska's
very
future head coach
against
coaching
BYU
in this game. Either way,
I don't think Nebraska's going to get that lucky.
Okay.
No. He's not getting either.
Nebraska, and like, if you think Tennessee fans are scarred against Florida, talk to any Nebraska fan right now about them in close games and things going their way when it's a game of chance happening. So I don't think they're lucky enough to get either one of these great coaches. I think Lance Leipold's more of their speed at this point.
And he may be the best one.
Yeah, it could be great.
Of the options. Arkansas and Texas A&M. A&M is favored by 2 points. They're hosting the Razorbacks. I'm taking Arkansas here.
Now, I think Arkansas is winning big.
I don't know if it's big. But big would be what to you in college for this game?
Paul, look how bright you are right now.
I feel it. I need to change into sunglasses.
We just talked about the Sermon on the Mount. You look like you're about to levitate. Paul is going to levitate right now.
The sunset's coming through the windows
for
those listening.
I think they're winning this game by 10 points.
Okay, so that's big. 10 here is big. Okay. I think Arkansas wins, but I think it's Arkansas by a possession. That could be 3, 6, 7, 8. It's a tight game, and Arkansas's ability to run the football and play their identity, I trust that more than anything with A&M.
I also think they will sack the quarterback and probably like sack, fumble, score.
However,
I would like to take this moment to quote one of our good friends and a legend, Coach Doug Matthews.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Who's coached a different program.
Are we going to get this damn guy on the line or what?
No, it's not that quote, which is also
a legendary
quote.
You need to quote him correctly.
No, I can't.
We're
on the radio.
That's right. He has long argued that in a decision being made between the talented big guys versus the talented little guys,
Go
big.
You always take the talented big guys over the talented little guys. Texas A&M's got the trenches. Their defensive line is great. Their defense, while they lost to App State, has been really, really good this year. I'm taking the talented big guys of A&M. We always say, what does Vegas know? Vegas knows that A&M defensively can slow down Arkansas in their run game.
Just like last week.
Texas A&M is going to win this game, and they are going to start to right the ship of their season. Mm-hmm. And that App State game may eventually look like just a blip on the radar for Jimbo Fisher.
We need Drew Sanders. I say we.
Offense is still bad.
Paul
though.
And I need
offense
Drew Sanders to be a difference in this game. Alabama transfer. He's already accumulated 6 sacks.
He's fun
tops
to watch.
In the nation. Recorded at least 1 sack in each game. As a team, Arkansas leads the country with 17 sacks. But
they give up a lot of passing.
If A&M is smart, they treat A-Chain. Let's go full steam ahead here with the run. Treat him like the Titans should be treating Derrick Henry.
Give him the ball a ton.
Run it. Don't throw it. Stick with your ground game and your defense.
But see, Arkansas is okay against the run. I don't know specifically, but Arkansas gives up a ton of passing yards, and Texas A&M can't throw it.
A ton.
Arkansas has given up 325-plus every game this year so far. That includes a game against Missouri State.
An average of 352.
Yes, but can A&M throw it?
No, that's why I like
but
this game. In
it's
Arkansas.
Also Arkansas wants to run it. They don't have a great passing games now without Treylon Burks. So A&M's got the defense to shut down their rush attack. Also, on the flip side of that,
quarterbacks.
Give me Sanders, the sophomore from Florida, SEC's leading rusher. Let's go.
Give me Max Johnson, breakout performance.
Let's go. A&M's defense though, allowing just 8.7 points per game. That's how you win in the SEC.
You can't tease this game hard enough.
That's how you win in the SEC.
I'm looking.
Isn't it amazing, by the way, that
I'm trying.
A&M has a win over Miami already, and they are, to me, by far, the most disappointing team in the SEC, or one of them.
So far, yes.
But like, if I'd have told you, hey, they're going to beat Miami and do it pretty easily, never be truly challenged at home, not a blowout or anything, but will they be disappointing going into that Arkansas game on a neutral site? You would have said no. I would have said no.
Well, who was the loss? I can't remember. There were 3 bad losses
Appalachian
that day.
State
they lost
them.
Appalachian
so,
State.
They ran it all over them.
That's the thing that kills them.
App State, by the way.
To me, it's not just App State, though. It's the fact that they do not have a functional 2022 offense. They look like they're running an old school offense in a digital era. Right now.
I'm asking this to Davey Hudson, who has a migraine right now, and I'm looking this up as I say it. James Madison is playing App State. I don't know where the game is. James Madison is legit. Appalachian State has been playing on the ropes every week, and they're the Cinderella of the college football season.
I'd watch that game.
I believe App State's likely favored.
They're likely on the road.
James Madison is a live dog in this game. I'm telling you, their quarterback is legit. Transfer from Colorado State. Everyone is going to be on App State based on what they've seen over the last 3 weeks.
And App State barely won last week with game day there. It took a Hail Mary.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like that's added to their
Everybody's
whole
favorite.
Aura.
Yeah.
James Madison's in their first year in D1 or FBS. Let me get it right. Eddie George corrected me a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Stop FBS, botching that, would you?
FCS.
You're hosting a show.
I said
you
Division
get
Two.
Right.
He goes, get it right, Hud. It's FCS. Sorry, Coach.
Yeah, it's not Division Two. They are Division One program.
I said I thought I was talking to Eddie instead of the coach here. He laughed.
It's
still Division One, Division Two to me.
It's one double A. It's never been Division Two. You're wrong in that. It's Division One A, Division One Double A. Was the old deal. Now it's FBS, FCS.
I think of my alma mater as
Division 2 is totally
AA.
Different. You have Division 1A, Division 1AA, then you have Division 2 and Division 3.
You're talking to a guy who grew up going to Tennessee State, Middle Tennessee State games. Trust me when I say it felt like Division 2 even though it was AA.
I think of 1AA, Columbia.
It definitely had Division 2 feels about it. I don't even know who's the top. I know Division III programs, Sewanee, Harding,
right.
Rhodes. I don't know
North
any
Dakota
Division
State.
II programs. No, they're FCS.
Oh, FCS.
Division II is totally separate. Like the FCS is the old James Madison, TSU, OVC schools,
right.
North Dakota State, Eastern Kentucky. I don't know Division II schools. Please tweet us with your favorite Division II program.
Tell us where we're wrong.
James tweet Madison, us your favorite
State.
Division
I'm
II schools. This is going to be a
Here's
great...
Here's an Outkick 360 poll question. Who is the Bama of Division II? That's what I want to know. Wisconsin Whitewater's D3.
James Madison's getting 7 points at Boone, North Carolina against App State. Take James
Adelphi is Division II.
Take James Madison with DraftKings.
Pick a letter. I'll tell you a Division II school. I've got an alphabetical list.
Hey, we get you
ready. Barry University.
We get you ready for the weekend.
I was recruited by Barry.
The top games. We'll give our picks next on Outkick 360.
Drury.
Just want to say, coming back, beware of Northern Illinois if you are a Kentucky Wildcats fan.
Why?
Outkick 360 rolls on.
Is there a quarterback back?
He's listed as questionable.
Rocky Lombardi?
Rocky Lombardi. He left the game against Vandy. Vandy won by 10 points. Now Northern Illinois goes on the road at Kentucky. Kentucky does not play well against... They're a lot like the Titans. They play down
to
their opponent.
They do play down, yeah.
Beware. And if you're a Wildcats fan...
Almost lost to Chattanooga last year at home.
Right. Around the same time.
Yeah.
Outkick 360 rolls on. 6th and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Chad, get us ready for the weekend.
Well, we got Northern Illinois for their scheduling, by the way.
Yeah, they're not afraid. They're not worried at all. They were looking good with their starting quarterback in against Vandy, but Vandy and AJ Swan took off at that point on, so good for them. Big weekend ahead. A lot of football we're going to be watching. The mentality we need to carry into this football weekend is a similar mentality to what we heard from Mike Tomlin last night, postgame, after a loss to the Browns.
But it's Tomlin.
He was asked by someone in the media covering Pittsburgh. He was asked about, hey, are there any encouraging signs you can take away from the game? And here's what Mike Tomlin had to say.
What a soft question in the first
half. I wasn't looking to be encouraged. I was looking to win the game. And so, you know, I would expect us to get better in all phases. And so I don't know if I share that perspective.
I love that.
Cheerleader tried to softball him, and he wasn't having it.
It was also, hey, there were some real encouraging signs in tonight's loss. And while I'm not really looking for encouragement, I'm looking for wins. I love Mike Tomlin's matter-of-fact persona. He's not rude about it. He's not angry with the media. He just says, well, I'm not really interested in that. I'm looking for wins and getting better in all phases and coming back and winning.
Paul,
love that.
I have found out how I'm going to call these victories for Cleveland, because we saw it in week 1 against Carolina. These are Haslam victories. If they're around 500, around the time Deshaun Watson is eligible in week 12 at Houston, after a bye week, they will be in playoff contention based on the division, because they now have a win over Pittsburgh, the win over Carolina. By the way, Baker Mayfield, lowest QBR in the NFL right now. Baker Mayfield in Carolina, which is crazy to think about. But knowing that Cleveland's 2-1, should be 3-0, that bodes well for a return of Deshaun Watson. Even if they're a game below 500, I still think they're in playoff contention, and that propels them forward.
Well, Cincinnati's start certainly helping them. I like what the Browns are doing very much. I like the formula. My question is, and John McClain's hit on this, how good is Deshaun Watson just going to plop back in and pick up where he left off after all this non-football? And they're in the cold, in a windy place where he didn't want to go, all of that. He is going to be the most scrutinized football player in the history of mankind when that suspension wears off.
Let's roll fast here. What storyline are we talking about on Monday? I will start by saying I think we are discussing the Titans-Colts game as being a pink slip day for Frank Reich a week from now after they host the Chiefs this weekend. And the Vols, they win big over Florida.
I think I'm going to roll with what you said. I think Packers-Bucks is going to be a big discussion point, whatever happens in that game come Monday.
I think we're talking a lot about UT being in a prime position.
Back at it on Monday. Hope you'll join us for Outkick 360.
Don't block the box. Kindly lock your locks.